Last week, we focused some attention on Genesis 49, verse 10. Tonight, we want to go back and use this as a launching point for some additional material. You may remember that in Genesis 49, Jacob or Israel is close to the time of death. In Genesis 49:10, there is an interesting prediction about one of Jacob's sons. This was Judah. Jacob said in making a prediction about this son, the scepter was not going to depart from Judah until Shiloh came. We in last week's lesson noted that Israel, the tribes in Israel, the 12 tribes, they all had various functions, but among the 12 tribes, Judah was the most prominent tribe. We also pointed out from Genesis 49:10 that when Shiloh, that's a reference to Jesus, when the Lord came, Judah and the other tribes, they lost their importance. There was a new testament, there was a new covenant that was given. Judah, at least for a while, and his descendants had a very, very important role in the nation of Israel. Now that's a fact. But tonight we want to go back and give pause and ask why the tribe of Judah had such an elevated status. And as we go through this material, you might think, well, that sounds boring. And at this point, I can understand why you might be thinking that. And there may be a little time here where you're tempted to let your mind go somewhere else and think, well, where on earth is he possibly going with this? If you will stick with me tonight, I will show you something that you may not have seen before, and it's something that's very, very interesting, but you kind of have to stay with me mentally. In previous lessons, we've talked about Joseph and his brothers. Now, we know from the story there in the book of Genesis that Joseph's brothers did not like him all that much. In fact, there was a time where Joseph went to see him, and his brothers, according to the text, they wanted to kill him. But they didn't kill him. They decided that rather than kill Joseph, they were going to take him over to this pit and throw him down in the pit. And they just leave him there. And that's what happened. All right, as we continue to read through the story about Joseph, we find that he didn't stay in the pit. His brothers ended up selling him. And after Joseph was sold, eventually he makes his way down to the area of Egypt, and he ends up in Potiphar's wife. Do we remember which brother suggested that Joseph be sold into slavery? We want to start reading from the book of Genesis. Let's back up from chapter 49 to Genesis chapter 37. In Genesis 37:21, and we'll not start our reading there, but we will start rehearsing the story from this verse. In Genesis 37:21, one of Joseph's brothers, and this was the brother Reuben suggested that Joseph not be killed. Reuben was the one who said, well, let's throw him in a pit. And it was Reuben's plan, according to the Genesis writer, that Joseph would stay in this pit for a period of time, and then Reuben would come back in a later time and rescue him. All right, Joseph's brothers do toss him in the pit. And as Joseph is down there in this pit, his brothers, Genesis 37:25, they start to eat a meal. It's about this time, as Joseph is in the pit, his brothers are eating a meal, that his brothers notice a caravan of people. The Ishmaelites are in the area where they are. And this caravan caused one of Joseph's brothers to make a suggestion. Let's go back, if you've turned back to Genesis 37, and look at the information in verses 26 and 27. And who? Judah. Well, that's that same son that we read about in Genesis 49:10. And we're going to see more about him tonight. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him. For he is our brother, our flesh. And his brethren hearkened unto him. It was Judah who suggested that Joseph be delivered from the pit and presumably death, and be sold to this caravan. All right. After this happens, several years go by. Joseph ends up in Potiphar's house, and as time continues to go, he now becomes a mighty ruler in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh himself. It is after this time that Joseph's family becomes hungry. They're not in Egypt at this point, but they're back home in the area of Israel. They hear that Egypt has grain, so they decide we've got to send the family members down there to Egypt and buy some groceries. Now, there are 10 of Jacob's brothers, or 10 of Joseph's brothers, rather, 10 of Jacob's sons, who go down to Egypt to purchase the groceries. And there's one son in this family, that's Benjamin. He stays back home with dad. So one brother, Joseph, is presumably dead, at least that's what the dad's thinking, but he's actually alive in Egypt. One brother stays behind, 10 brothers come down to the nation of Israel, or the nation of Egypt. All right, as Joseph's brothers are there, and before him, he recognizes them. Joseph also remembers the dream he had. That dream as far as, you know, things bowing down to him. understanding that at the time, that his brothers and even his dad would eventually bow down to him. Joseph realized that that dream was now coming true. All right, Joseph, to kind of get things moving along, accused his brothers of being spies. And they said, no, that's not true. But Joseph said, I think you're a spy. I think you've come down to see how well the land of Egypt is doing, and that's why you're here. And the brothers said, no. We are here just to buy food. We have a famine back home, and this is the situation, and we need some groceries. That's the long and the short of the story. So as things continue, Joseph is told that the youngest brother, Benjamin, had remained home with dad, or Israel, or Jacob. Joseph told his brothers, who did not recognize him, that he wanted to test their story. He said, all right, if you're telling me the truth, then let's go ahead and check things out. And maybe for good measure, Joseph threw his brothers into prison for 3 days, Genesis 42, verse 17. After his brothers have spent 3 days in confinement, Joseph brings them out and basically says, well, I'm a fairly compassionate man. So tell you guys what, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to offer you a deal. He said, I'm going to allow you to have the food that you want. And I'm going to allow everyone but one of you to go back to your dad. I'm going to keep one brother here. And then you have to bring that youngest brother who didn't come with you. And when you do that, then of course, the brother that I'm keeping, the brother that I'm holding, then you'll be able to all go back as well. He said, if you don't come back to Egypt, and if you don't come back to Egypt with this younger brother, then I know that you are not telling me the truth. Genesis 42, verse 24 says the brother that was selected to stay behind in Egypt was Simeon. All right, so Joseph's brothers have gone through this experience. Simeon is retained there in the nation of Egypt. And nine of the brothers are then able to go back home to Jacob, or Israel, the man who's dying in Genesis 49. And after the brothers get back home, they tell their dad what has happened. Jacob, or Israel, at this point is very, very upset. Jacob is thinking, okay, there was one son, Joseph. Now, Joseph was still alive, but Jacob was thinking that Joseph had been killed. And that coat of many colors had been stained with blood many years before, and he thought that he'd lost that son to a wild beast. And then Jacob, as he thinks about things a little bit more, he says, well, we were hungry, and I sent 10 of my sons down to Egypt for food. But only 9 of those sons have come back. Not only has one of my sons died, but now I have a son who was also sitting in an Egyptian prison. And if this wasn't bad enough, that guy down there in Egypt now wants me to take my youngest son, the last son in my house, and he wants him to come to Egypt as well. So I've lost one son, the second son in the Egyptian prison, he's essentially lost, and now this third son is being asked to go to a foreign country and experience who knows what, and I may lose him as well. Now you may remember a few weeks ago, we noted that Jacob, or Israel, as he appeared before Pharaoh, he said, I've lived a hard life. The days of my life have been few and evil, or hard. And as we look at this life, we'll get to a passage in a little bit where Jacob says, I've got some gray hairs. I think I can understand why he drew that conclusion and why he said his life was so hard. At the end of Genesis 42, and that's where you want to be right now if you've been trying to kind of follow along a little bit. At the end of Genesis 42, we find that another of the sons, Reuben, said that, hey, Dad, I will take the youngest son to Egypt. I'll take Benjamin down there. And Reuben said, Dad, I will take Benjamin down there, and if he doesn't come back, you can kill my two sons. Dad, this is my guarantee to you, that if you will let us go down there and get food, I will do everything I can to protect this son. Reuben made an incredible offer, but Genesis 42, verse 38, says the offer was refused. And he said, my son, that's Benjamin, the youngest son, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother's dead. Well, not literally, but that's what he believed. And he only is left. This is my youngest, and you want to risk him too. If harm befall him by the way in which ye go, then will ye bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. Reuben was willing to put a lot on the line. But Jacob said, no, I simply will refuse it. All right, some more time goes on. And the famine that was such a difficult thing in the nation of Israel continued to cause problems for the group. And the time came where Joseph's family was once again in a state of great despair. And it came to the point where there was only one choice. We've got to go where the food is, and that's Egypt. So we've got to get some groceries from this other country. So at this point, Israel, or Jacob the dad, finally consented. Okay, we got to go down to Israel, and we've got to get the food there. But after this point was conceded, Judah again enters the picture. And Judah recalls that first meeting with the folks down there in Egypt, Genesis 43, verses 3 through 5. And Judah spake unto him, that's the dad or Israel, saying, the man, he didn't know it was Joseph, but that's who he's talking about, his brother, the man did solemnly protest unto us, saying, ye shall not see my face, except your brother, that would be Simeon, the youngest brother, be with you. If thou wilt send our brother with us, we will go down and buy thee food. But if thou wilt not send him, we will not go down. For the man said unto us, ye shall not see my face, except your brother be with you. Judah laid it out. And then as you move down in the chapter, we'll also in just a moment look at verses 8 through 10. We find some additional information being offered by the same son, Judah. And Judah said unto Israel, his father, send the lad, that's the youngest, Benjamin, with me. And we will arise and go that we may live and not die, both we and thou and also our little ones. The food situation was that bad that they thought that death was going to come because of the famine. He said, I'll be surety for him. I'll be the guarantee that he comes back. Of my hand shall thou require him. If I bring him not back unto thee and set him before thee, then let me bear the blame forever. For except we had lingered, surely we had now returned a second time. Judah said to his dad, we need to go. And dad, we not only need to go, but we have to go with the son, with Benjamin, because that's the deal. And he said, I will guarantee that this son will come back. If the child doesn't come back with me, then lay this guilt, lay this blame on me. Let me bear the penalty forever. Now, if you've stuck with me so far, thank you. We still needed, though, a few more details. We now turn our attention to the information in Genesis 44. Joseph's brothers, including that youngest one, Benjamin, they all make the trip down to Egypt to get food. And they're successful. They get the food. And all the brothers were probably thinking, well, hey, this has worked out really well. And they're all headed back home with all the things that they need. The men not only had their food, but Simeon and Benjamin were with them. And everything looked great. But as Joseph's brothers are about to leave town, they're stopped. An official from Joseph stops them. Joseph had his steward intercept his brethren. Joseph also did something else. Joseph had a silver cup that presumably belonged to him put in with the baggage of his brothers. And the brothers didn't know that, but Joseph had a plan. Joseph wanted this cup put into the belongings so he could carry out a very unusual plan. Now, his brothers, as they were stopped, they were asked about this particular cup. And they said, oh no, we didn't steal anything. And we've got the food that we bought, but we didn't steal anything. And the steward begins to search the boys' baggage. In fact, the brother said, you can search our gear. If you think that we're thieves, and this is paraphrasing a good bit, but if you think that we are guilty of something, if you think that we've stolen something, you check out our bags and see if you can find the cup in there. A search was conducted. Genesis 44, verse 12, tells us about the results of that search. And he searched and began at the eldest and left off at the youngest. And then notice this, and the cup, that silver cup, was found in Benjamin's sack. The cup was not only found, it was found in the youngest son's sack. And this was that son that Judah said, if you send him down with me, I will guarantee that he'll come back, Dad. Let me bear the blame forever if this child doesn't come back. Well, Benjamin was supposed to be cared for by Judah, but as we saw at this point, Benjamin and really all the brothers are in deep, deep trouble. Because of what had taken place, this group of brothers, they go back and they make their way to Joseph. And as these brothers come before Joseph, Judah comes to the forefront. Genesis 44, verses 14 and 15. And Judah, notice how he's put forward, and his brethren came to Joseph's house. And he was yet there. And they fell before him on the ground. And Joseph said unto them, what deed is this that ye have done? I know ye not that such a man as I can indeed divine. Now, these words sound like Joseph was pretty angry. He gives a presentation that he's very, very upset and presumably going to inflict great punishment on his brothers. Now, at this point, it would seem that Joseph's brothers didn't know what to do. They were pretty much terrified. I mean, it looks like they've stolen a diviner's cup, something that would have been very, very precious to the Egyptian people. Things were so bad, and then in verse 16, Judah said God was punishing them for their sins. He's thinking back what had happened to Joseph, and he said, we should not have done that. We acted in a very bad way. So Judah, as he looks at this situation, he says to the one he's talking to, this official, who's his brother Joseph, but he doesn't know that at this time. He says, tell you what, sir. He said, my brothers and I, we will be your slaves. Well, that was probably about the best that he could hope for. Maybe they could eventually work off the debt or something, but that was better than being killed. And as Joseph hears this offer from Judah, we'll be your slaves, Joseph turned around and said, no. He said, you brothers will not be my slaves. He said, I want only one slave. Notice, if you will, the information in Genesis 44, verse 17. And he said, far be it from me that I should do so. I'm not going to take you all as slaves. The man in whose hand the cup is found, he, I only want one man for my bondman. I only want one man for my slave. The rest of you, you can go. I'm going to release the nine of you, but this younger brother that you brought, because the cup was in his stuff, I am going to keep him as my slave. It would have been bad. It would have been really bad if all of Joseph's brothers had been made slaves in Egypt. That certainly would have broke the heart of Jacob or Israel. But imagine a situation that was even worse. Sending nine of those sons back, and the youngest one, who the dad said, I can't bear to lose him. The youngest one is kept in Egypt while the rest are able to go home. That was the worst possible fate. Judah heard Joseph's words, and then he responded in a very humble way. The information in verse 18. Then Judah came near unto him and said, O my Lord, let thy servant, I pray thee, speak a word in my Lord's ears. And let not thine anger burn against thy servant, for thou art even as Pharaoh. Judah commends this Egyptian, who really was Joseph, in the greatest possible way and shows great humility. We're not going to read it, but if you want to later, read verses 19 through 34. You will find a beautiful and passionate plea from Judah. And as you look at these verses, I'm going to sum them up. And think about them as the summation is offered. In verses 19 through 34, Judah essentially says, I know what's happened. I know that the cup was found in my brother's stuff. But sir, I want you to take me. Sir, I want you to let me be a substitute for my brother Benjamin. Yes, it's true that the cup was found in my brother's belongings. I know that it's sin that has brought us to this time and this place and the circumstance. And this sin is not mine, it's his. And sir, I know that a payment has to be rendered for the wrong that was done. And I'm not trying to deny that there was any kind of wrong. I recognize that there was sin, and I'm not asking you to overlook this matter. But sir, I am pleading with you, let me bear the consequences of the sin for this brother. Let me give my life for this man. Let me pay for this man's sin with my existence. I want you to let me be a substitute. I want to stand in place of this man, and I want to accept his punishment. Put this man's guilt, put this man's shame, put this man's penalty on me. Judah, the son that we read about in Genesis 49, verse 10, offered to be a substitute for another. When we think about the Lord, what do we find? For it is evident that our Lord has sprung out of the tribe of Judah. Hebrews 7, verse 14. There was more than one reason for Jesus coming from the tribe of Judah. But one of the reasons, we might say one of the most important reasons, is the reason found this evening. Judah was willing to stand in the place of another and accept the full punishment. He didn't do what was wrong. He was the one who was really trying to go ahead and fix everything in the first place. And yet when this problem arises, he stands up and says, let me take the punishment. Let me bear the brunt of the problem. Take my life and let me pay. Folks, that's exactly what Jesus Christ has done for you, for me, for the entire world. Long before the plan of redemption was understood by people in the new and certainly the old, the Lord was giving a hint of what he was trying to do. Judah, I assume, had no clue as far as these actions, the significance of what he was doing. But God knew, and God put this information in there to go ahead and show us what the Lord has done for us. What Jesus has done for the world is truly great, beyond magnificent. And if we understand how he literally stands in our place, like Judah did for his brother Benjamin, we should be grateful people who want to obey him in every single way. And tonight, we hope that that's true for you. you realize what the Lord has done, that he has literally given his life on our behalf. He's been that perfect sacrifice so that we can have peace with God and go to heaven. But to access that sacrifice, there's some things that we need to do. We have to believe in it. We've got to have faith. And we can't continue to live according to the old ways. That's not going to allow us to be right with him. But we confess him as Lord. We confess him as the one who is literally our substitute. And then to access the powerful blood that was shed there on the cross. The Bible says we're baptized into him. So we can have fellowship with him. And so every single sin can be washed away. And then who would not want to continue to walk with the Lord, who is their substitute? What a great, great lesson from the book of Genesis. Jesus loves us. He's given himself as a substitute for us. Are we in a right relationship with him tonight? That's the question that we want to consider as we sing the invitation song. And if our relation is not right with him, can we help you restore that? Let us know about that need if it exists as we stand and sing the selected song.
There's not a friend like the holy Jesus. No, not one. No, not one. None else could hear all our souls' diseases. No, not one. No, not one. Jesus knows all about our struggles. He will guide till the day is done. There's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No, not one. No, not one. No friend like him is so high and holy. No, not one. No, not one. And yet no friend is so meek and lowly. No, not one. No, not one. Jesus knows all about our struggles. He will guide till the day is done. There's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No, not one. No, not one. There's not an hour that he is not near us. No, not one. No, not one. No night so dark, but his love can cheer us. No, not one. No, not one. Jesus knows all about our struggles. He will guide till the day is done. There's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No, not one. No, not one.
Please be seated. If you did not have the opportunity to partake of the Lord's Supper this evening,